Merkle Media.
Oh, Ashback Fridays on Macroaggressions. We're going back to January 6th, 2021. It's episode number 88, Broken America. If you're thinking of converting some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency into, or maybe even your retirement accounts, into something tangible like gold and silver, you can do so through our website. Go to www.macroaggressions.gold. That'll put you in touch with Tony Arterburn over at Wise Wolf, and he will hook you right up. Now enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Swangled in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. Appreciate you checking us out. We know you've got a lot of options out there. If you want to spread the word, I would appreciate it. There's a little share button on the podcast recorder that you're listening to, and that'll allow you to get the program out and make other people aware of it if you think something they might like. The audience is growing. It's really international, too, which is fascinating to me. I mistakenly assumed it would be, you know, maybe America-centric, I guess, but to see the response from people all over the world has been amazing. I think it's sort of a testament to the fact that this is not a, the problems that we're facing are not limited to any one geographical area. They might be worse, you know, a little bit worse in one area than the others, but it's not as if you can hide from what we're seeing out there, this global insanity. And I love that. I love that we're reaching people all around the world. I'm fortunate that growing up as a kid, I had a family that was big into traveling. My mom was one of those flight attendants for Pan Am in the 60s, you know, that they were, it was like the coolest job in the world. My dad worked for TWA as well. So we went all over the place. I've been all over the world. I'm really fortunate about that. So when I'm talking, you know, in these shows, you know, I'm an American and I'm sort of coming from an American perspective, but I'm not an American that doesn't have a passport. You know, I think that the stats show that like 2/3 of Americans don't have a passport, and only 2.5% of Americans leave the country during a given year. So there's a lot of this sort of snake eating its own tail kind of going on in America, where it's like America centric. And if it, you know, and we all get kind of bogged down with that. But, and the reason why I bring this up is because what I want to talk about is the insanity and the problems that we've had in the United States. But I know that this is a topic that will appeal to the international listeners as well, because it's not limited to the U.S., but I'm going to point out some of the things that we've been experiencing here. I'm not even talking about the corona situation. I mean, that's that's relatively new. I'm talking about the insanity of America, the crazy hypocritical laws and statutes and the way our, you know, the things that we've neglected in this country, at the expense of prioritizing other things. Our infrastructure is a straight up disaster in the United States. And, you know, the reason why it's not going to get fixed anytime soon isn't because the money. I mean, it's not because we don't have the money for it. We do have the money for it. We can just print it out of thin air with the Fed, debase the currency even more. Why not? We've printed up $5 trillion, printed up 25% of the money that's in circulation at this moment of US dollars. 25% of that money came into existence, was printed into existence in 2020. No wonder Bitcoin's going through the roof. They're debasing the currency on a scale we've never even seen before. So we have the money to do these sorts of things if we wanted, if there was interest in it. But the main reason why the crumbling infrastructure and things like that don't get fixed is because it's not very glamorous for a politician. It doesn't benefit them, really. They can't run on a platform of, I fixed all the bridges. People would be like, yeah, you're supposed to. That's government. You're supposed to be fixing the bridges. And be like, no, 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 but I got them fixed. And everyone will go, big fucking deal. Like, what else have you done? Where's my handout? What'd you do on the things that I voted for? So infrastructure is nothing. It's not exciting. It's not glamorous. It's not going to get you elected. It's not going to get you it's definitely not going to get you reelected. Nobody really cares. But you should. And in 2017, the infrastructure report card by the American Society of Civil Engineers came out, and it really should be a wake-up call to the country, because the grades that America got were about in line with like what you would expect Spicoli's report card to be, you know, just a bunch of C pluses and D's. Maybe a D plus, I don't know. Just really sort of below average scores and no clear path to changing any of this. So, you know, what this civil engineering group did was they assigned America grades, like you get in school, A, B, C, D, and F. The results, I got to be honest with you, they're horrifying, but also not surprising, really, because almost all of these areas are like top-down, centrally planned, communist style. So we'll start alphabetically. We'll start with aviation, okay? Aviation in the United States was given a D. Airports in the United States handle 2 million passengers every single day, with growing congestion slated to continue. But, you know, after the corona situation, maybe not. Maybe airport infrastructure will calm down after that. Look, even though the technology is high and the aircrafts are economically efficient, the airport infrastructure and the air traffic control systems are a total disaster. There is an estimated $42 billion gap in the amount of funding required to keep up with the needed investments just in the airports. So that's why it gets a D. It's definitely needed, and not a priority. Not even close to being a priority. I mean, you get a couple planes that crash due to some sort of failure, you know, some sort of air traffic control failure. Then you probably will see some movement on this. But absent something, absent a catastrophic or catalyzing event, like airplanes crashing in, right after takeoff or something, or on landing, you probably won't won't see much change there. But clearly there's a gigantic push to have that. You see that in foreign countries, though. There's a lot of expansion of airports in the Middle East, especially. Man, they're growing like crazy. But in the United States, you're seeing, well, I mean, I'm in Denver. So Denver, you know, the Denver airport is known for lots of things. Airplanes are one of them, but in my opinion, not the most important or interesting component of it. It's what's going on underneath there. But they spent, what, $5 billion to build the airport and the Denver airport, which was totally unnecessary. And it was so far out of town that it's sort of an unusual expenditure. But now they've spent, and it's relatively new. It's only like 25 years old. But they've decided they need to spend an extra $1 billion now to retrofit it, to remodel it. So they're gutting the whole thing and using that. I swear, I think it's money laundering, but I can't prove it. Bridges in the United States got a C+. Not bad. About 40% of American bridges, 56,000 in total, are 50 years old or older, with 9% deemed structurally deficient. Of these deficient bridges, there are 188 million trips made across them every single day. So, the structurally deficient bridges, of which there are many, are responsible for 188 million trips made across them each and every day. I don't know. Maybe fix them. Maybe invest a little bit of money to fix the bridges. The average age of the 614,000 bridges in America, there's 614,000 bridges in the United States. The average age is increasing, and a huge percentage of them are pushing into these years, you know, the number of years old they are, into a very dangerous category. But once again, it's like everything's fine. It's normalcy bias. Everything's fine with that bridge because it didn't fall over yesterday, and it didn't crumble today. So we assume it'll work tomorrow. At some point, it will come down, right? This is just math. The amount needed to fix or replace these deficient bridges is now well over $120 billion. Just to fix bridges. You imagine you run on a campaign of, I'm going to fix all the bridges in the United States. You will get 3 people will pat you on the back for it. The rest of them will be like, who cares? And yet, meanwhile, there's 188 million people making trips across these deficient ones every single day. It's nuts. But it's not glamorous. You know, unless you make a movie about it, right? The bridges of Madison County. Ooh, that bridge will get fixed. Rail system. Rail system got the highest score of anything. Got a B. And I think that was generous, to be honest. The rail system split into public and private areas, okay? With the privately owned rails being financed by corporations and thus way better, better serviced, better maintained. Private rail companies spent $27 billion just in the year 2015 to maintain their infrastructure and keep their business up and running efficiently and all that stuff. But the public rail system has taken a beating over the past 150 years, and it requires significant funding, especially for passenger rails. The expansion of rails in the United States has essentially stopped. Overhauling the existing rail service has slowed considerably, and the overall quality has plunged, but it's still ranked as a B. So, you know, the high-speed rails trains that they've proposed, like the ones in France and China, don't hold your breath. they've been talking about the LA to Vegas bullet train for, well, as long as I've lived in Vegas. So, you know, it's been a while, and I don't live in Vegas anymore, but I work there. And just to give you an idea of, see, nothing really sums up government stupidity quite like the bullet train proposal from LA to Vegas. It's so stupid. And I've got to assume they have really smart people working on it, but there's such a glaring flaw in it that just cannot be overlooked. And that is the fact that the LA portion of the rail, of this rail service, the LA to Las Vegas portion, doesn't start in LA. It starts in Palmdale, which is an hour and a half outside of Los Angeles. So you have to drive an hour and a half out of LA to the high desert, which is not, it's not like a suburb of Los Angeles. It's like you have to go in a roundabout way to the high desert, to Lancaster, to a parking lot, leave your car there, and then take a bullet train to Las Vegas, which will get you the rest of the three-hour trip will only take you like an hour. So you have to drive like an hour and a half in LA traffic to get to the place where you can leave your car and then take a bullet train for the rest of the trip. But the bullet train doesn't shave off all that much. It's totally ridiculous. It's the dumbest idea ever. It's guaranteed not to work. It's guaranteed to have six people on the train. And yet they keep talking about it. Why? I don't know, actually. I don't know if this is some sort of money laundering operation. I mean, it's the only thing I can think of, because it'd be like if you say we're going to set up a high-speed train from New York City to Philadelphia. It's going to go direct. And you're like, awesome. That sounds great. That'll cut out the middleman. And, you know, I know there's trains that actually do make that trip, but let's just say high-speed train. And they go, okay, here's the catch. In order to get on this train, you have to drive to Bridgeport, Connecticut to get on it. And you're like, what? Why the fuck would I do that? And you're like, because it's high speed. And you're like, yeah, but the one point is totally out of the way. And by the way, not even in the city. They're like, yeah, but it's a bullet train. So this is the level of thinking that we're witnessing here. And that's people talking about building out new rail systems. I can't even imagine what sort of cockamamie ideas they've come up with for existing rail stations. All right, moving on. Dams. Dams got a D. The dams in the United States are springing leaks, sometimes literally, and the solution calls for $45 billion in federal spending just to fix the existing problems. You want to talk about money that you're going to get no credit for as a politician? Spending $45,000 million to fix dams. Now, you don't want to be late on fixing the dam, obviously, right? We know what the ramifications of that could be. But once again, you're only going to get, this is a very reactive solution. It's not proactive, not when you're dealing with United States bureaucracy. And I'm sure that this level of bureaucracy is consistent around the globe. I'm sure there's something about government. It doesn't necessarily bring in the best and brightest. It brings in, you know, a lot of defective human beings that are looking for either guaranteed jobs where they can do jack shit and still get paid for it, which happens quite a bit, or there's some sort of psychopath that is looking to control everything and get themselves in a position. But either way, the idea of like, hey, let's spend all this money to fix dams, it just doesn't really pop up. The average dam in the United States is over half a century old. And it is not surprising to me that over 2,100 of them have been classified as high hazard. That's just a few years ago. a few years ago, they classified 2,100 dams as being high hazards. 2,100 is a lot. Guess what? That number has since changed. It has ballooned to almost 16,000. So there are 16,000 dams in the United States that are listed as being high hazards. So, and look, there's 75,000 more dams in the United States as well as those 16,000. So the prices for repair is going to continue to rise. But like most infrastructure projects in America, the general public will just, you know, turn their heads and pretend that the problem really just does not even exist. I'll tell you what would be a real problem. You hear about the Three Gorges Dam in China, talking about that thing shifting recently when they were having the heavy rains there. Holy shit. I watched a great Discovery Channel show on the making of that. It was fascinating. I'll tell you one thing about China. Because they run that top-down authoritarian sort of control, they just said, all right, this is where we're putting the dam. And they call it, it's three gorges dam, because it's like three rivers sort of come together, sort of like a bigger version of Pittsburgh, I guess. But they said, all right, we're going to put the dam here. Anything, you know, upstream of this is going to be massively flooded. And there are all these villages that had been there for like hundreds, maybe even thousands of years. They're like, yeah, all you guys are going to get wiped out. Like, we'll relocate you somewhere else. They're like, but our ancestors have lived here for, we're building this dam. It's everything in all these cities here is going to be under, 100 feet of water, 300 feet of water. So you're going to be relocated. And then they just start building that thing. And then recently they said they were having big problems with it, with those floods. So that could be something to keep your eye on. In the United States, drinking water got a D. It should get an F for fluoride. Really? The future of America is as cloudy as the water itself. Really? Estimates by the Water Works Association. I thought the Water Works Association was only in monopoly. Runs into the trillions of dollars needed to fix the broken system of pipes, which is estimated. It estimates that there are 700. This stat is going to blow your mind, and I swear it's correct. 700 broken water mains every day in the United States, and they waste 2 trillion gallons of drinking water because of broken water mains. 700 broken water mains every single day, wasting 2 trillion gallons of drinking water. Look, with 100-year-old pipes running underground that are filled with lead and other contaminants, the prospect of replacing them all is just a massive undertaking. But it's got to be done, because our water supply has sprung so many leaks that total replacement has really become the only option. What sort of new technology have we created for water pipes? I mean, just the fact that they're not made out of lead anymore, I think is probably, or copper. So what do? We have to rip out and change all of that. Literally, they said it would run in the trillions of dollars. But I'll tell you what, I would much rather spend $1 trillion replacing all the pipes in the United States than spend $1 trillion on the military to go bomb the shit out of some country and then spend billions more rebuilding that. You know, the thing that really, I think, gets a lot of people pissed off, it's like, oh, we don't have money for, I mean, we just kind of talked about earlier, they do technically have the ability to get money for this, but they always claim they don't have money. We don't have money to fix this. We don't have money to build out new bridges and put in a new energy system and build a, you know, and put plumbing and run drinking water, you know, to all these places. We don't have money to do that here in the United States. We have money to do that in Afghanistan. We have money to hire Halliburton and KBR to come in and rebuild the bombed out Iraq with all that stuff. What did we do first? We took out their sewer. We took out their power. We took out their communications when the war first started to create massive chaos. And then guess what? Then we spend money to go and rebuild it. We've got all the money in the world to rebuild shit in Iraq. Don't have any money to rebuild in America. And the politicians wonder why the people hate their guts. Moving on to energy. The energy system in the United States got a very generous D+. Look, everywhere. For those that haven't been in the United States, there are power lines running everywhere. I'm not sure how it's done in every other country, but here there's wooden poles and power lines running everywhere, every city and every state. And every time it's winter, you get ice on them and the power lines come down and everybody acts surprised. Like, I can't believe that the power went out and it's in the middle of winter, the time when we can least afford for it to go out, and it's gone out. Well, what the fuck do you think is going to happen? Why aren't we burying these power lines? Why aren't we doing something different? We're still running wires like this. This is insane. Of course, it gets to a much bigger question, which is, why are we still dealing with this source of energy in the first place? I mean, why aren't we, clearly we have, different forms of energy that are being suppressed by us, but I digress. That's totally going to be a different show, I suppose. But in the United States, we are 70 years in to a system of power lines that is only built to last 50 years. So we've got massive inefficiencies here. We talk about we got to get new power plants. We got to get nuclear. We got to replace all these coal. We have clean burning coal, which is total horseshit, by the way. But we're going to build more power plants. Okay, fine. You need to build more power plants, but let's be efficient with the ones that we have, right? Half the energy is lost just in the transmission process of it. So we're being very inefficient with the way we create and transport electricity. So why not fix these inefficiencies first before we start building additional power plants? But, of course, politics gets in here. But the 650,000 miles of high voltage power lines that are currently running throughout the country are already maxed out. So without replacement of this old equipment or, a move into renewable systems or both, really, power grid will continue to brown out and eventually grind to a halt. That is, if an EMP doesn't take it out sooner. The United States had the option. They've been presented with scenarios that say if an electromagnetic pulse, an EMP, were to be detonated in the atmosphere above America, it would have catastrophic ramifications for the United States, obviously. But if you wanted to go through and retrofit all of the major power stations and hubs, it would only cost $2 billion. $2 billion is a lot of money, don't get me wrong. But when I say only, it means that it would only cost $2 billion as opposed to the cost of replacing everything after an EMP, which would obviously be many multiples of that. So, what are you going to do? You're a politician. You're going to authorize the spending of $2 billion to shore up your power grid from a potential EMP attack. And then what? You'll never get credit for it. You'll never get credit for preventing something that didn't happen. You'll only get blamed for it if it does happen and you didn't prevent it. So you can see the political appetite for something like this not being very strong, because it doesn't give you a real victory and that money could be used for something else that would. Like, let's just, as an example of that, you have $2 billion to play with. Would you use it to shore up your power systems around the country to prevent them from being knocked out by an EMP, which would create not just a financial catastrophe, but it'd be mass chaos? You could do that, or you could take that $2 billion and put it into schools, as an example. Well, then when you go run for re-election, you'd be like, I increased the budget. They were trying to cut teachers' pay, and I came in here, and I got $2 billion, and I raised teachers' pay, and I was able to bring all these other teachers back. That guy's going to get elected, re-elected. The guy who's like, I spent $2 billion to protect all of you people in here from an EMP attack that was surely coming to knock out our power grid, but didn't, because now it's retrofitted and they knew that it wouldn't really work, so they didn't do it. You know what I mean? You'll never get any credit for that, but that's something that America could do right now to save themselves from that. And considering you always hear these leaked memos or, you know, talking about grid down collapse and economic catastrophe because of that, and that being, you know, part of a false flag operation, part of me thinks that maybe they don't want to retrofit the power grid because they plan to take it down themselves at some point. Why spend the money, right? Hazardous waste, D+. The hazardous waste, almost 200 million Americans live within 3 miles from one of the over 18,000 hazardous waste sites around the nation. I'm going to read this sentence again to you because I think it's really important. Almost 200 million Americans live within just 3 miles. A lot of people in this country can run 3 miles. 200 million people live within running distance of one of the over 18,000 hazardous waste sites around the country. That ought to let you sleep well at night, huh? Now, recycling's made a dent in the problem, but there are still 22 million acres that are currently dedicated to housing or storing the nation's toxic waste. 22 million acres. Now, to be clear, I'm not talking about trash, and I'm not talking about landfills. That's sort of normal, but I'm specifically talking about hazardous waste materials and the infrastructure built to manage, store, and dispose of it. We received a D+ for that. Because, you know, who cares about hazardous waste? Let's just build schools next to it. Let's build subdivisions next to it. I mean, I've worked for many developers. Hazardous waste sites, not where you want to be. In Las Vegas, there's a place called the PepCon explosion. It happened in, I think, 91, 89 or 91. I think it was 91. Rocket fuel place blew to smithereens and created a huge toxic waste disaster in this place. It's one of those EPA Superfund type deals where the county came in, gave you a lot of money. I worked for one of the home builders that had an option on the land, and they talked about how what they were doing is they were remediating the dirt, the soil. So they'd had to truck out 4 stories of dirt. We're talking about like God, I don't even know. It must have been 1,000-acre site. And they were trucking down like out 40 feet of sand, out of dirt, I should say. All the way down, digging that all out, trucking it out to some place where it was cleaned up, and then bringing it back and using it to fill it in. And I was like... And they're like, well, we have the option on all this land, on some of this land. It was going to be like a consortium of home builders. And I remember thinking, our contracts are fat already. Like, there are 100-page contracts people had to sign when they were buying the houses, like normal houses. But if we're building this on a toxic waste dump, like, what are the chances of just a normal person in a normal house in a normal location getting cancer? I don't know, 50%, right? I think one in two people, let's just say one in three. You build a big development on a toxic waste site with thousands of homes. You don't think those people are going to sue your ass for saying, oh, you, I contracted my cancer from this place? So it's like, no way. No, thank you. We wound up passing on the land, but other builders didn't. They built on it. There's houses in Las Vegas. You can get, there's a whole master plan area that's literally built on a toxic waste site where rocket fuel manufacturing company blew up. So hazardous waste D+, inland waterways D. America's 25,000 miles of inland waterways are they're a mess. Really, there's no other way to explain it. And the upgrades required to keep them, you know, afloat, so to speak, their estimates say it will take 30 years to complete them. That's if they have the money. The dams and the 239 locks are outdated. They're crumbling. The fixes that need to be made are astronomical. And so it's the amount of money. But here's the thing. This system of transportation, these inland waterways, these rivers and locks and things like that, it moves 600 million tons of cargo yearly. And that is about 15% of all domestic freight. But there are so many massive delays because of this infrastructure that about half of all ships using this wind up in some form of a delay, getting them from point A to B, to the point where they've factored it into their equations because it's just such a mess. And it's sort of a subset of that, but it's listed as a different category. That's levies. They got a D. You know, in typical American political fashion, Congress passed the Water Resources Reform and Development Act back in 2014, which expanded the levy safety program nationwide. But the program has not yet received any funding. Well, I passed the Water Resource Reform and Development Act back in 2014. Yeah, but you didn't give it any money. $80 billion is needed in order to improve or maintain the 30,000 mile levee system in the United States. They need $80 billion. This is in large part due to the expansion into floodplains. So, but here's the thing though, these levees are responsible for protecting infrastructure. Their infrastructure, but they're also protecting other infrastructure and communities and property. And the amount, the value of the property that these levees are protecting is over $1 trillion. And yet they got a D grade and they need $80 billion to retrofit them. And they passed this Water Resources Reform and Development Act and didn't give it any money. It's just so, and you know, not only is it protecting $1 trillion of value of property with these levies, it's also protecting hundreds of colleges and 30 professional sports stadiums as well. So find a justification for it. Maybe you're a huge sports fan and don't want your stadium wiped away when one of these levees breaks. Fine. I don't know. Maybe you just want to live. Maybe that's enough of justification for you to fix these things. Ay. Ports. Ports got a C+. Not bad. About $4.6 trillion of economic activity flows through these U.S. ports every year. About 26% of all economic activity. And there are about 1,000 ports in the U.S. that handle 99% of overseas trade. Everything comes, just about 99% of it comes in through a port. It doesn't all come in through airplanes like you might think, like cargo planes. But they're unbelievably outdated. And in some cases, they're too shallow to allow large ships to dock with them. The United States has been investing in upgrading these facilities, but not nearly at the rate required to, you know, to bring them up to a level that would put them in a category to rival Hong Kong or Singapore or Shanghai. And considering how much trade finds its way into American shores, it's hard to understand why these ports have been ignored for so long. And then we even see the privatization of these ports and them selling them off to China, Long Beach port, Port of Los Angeles, which comes into Long Beach, technically. It's a Chinese port. Public parks, D+. Americans go on 7 billion recreational outings to public parks each year, and they depend on the work provided by the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to make these parks look safe and enjoyable, and the states provide the bulk of the maintenance and operations for these facilities. Every president, it seems like every president has tried to sell off a portion of these national parks at some point. They just get that developer syndrome where they're like, oh, look at all this land and I have control over it. Oh, we could take a piece and sell it to these developers and, you know, generate some money. I mean, they all look at it like that. They do generate some revenue, but for the most part, these are considered to be money losing operations for the government and thus don't receive the financial help that they desperately need. So, we have these amazing parks. And if you are into the work of David Politis and Missing 411, you may say, well, can we use some of that funding to go look for the people that keep disappearing in these national parks? I certainly would like to do that. If you're familiar with his story, I mean, talk about when he's an ex police officer in California. And he said that when they tried to get the national parks to give him the database list of all the people, they told him it would be like $36,000 or something like that. Crazy. They're saying, oh, we don't keep track of all the missing people that go, you know, all the people that go missing in our parks. Well, you better start because there's a lot of them. Maybe if you had more funding, you could safely account for them, or maybe not. Maybe there's something underground going on. There's a lot of speculation that there's underground, deep underground military bases, dumbs, under these national parks. I don't know. I don't have information about that, but I've heard the rumors. Anyway, our roads in America, they get a D. The most obvious fail of American infrastructure are the crumbling and potholed roads that just keep expanding, yet always seem to be filled beyond capacity with cars and trucks starting and stopping for miles at a time, traffic everywhere, constant traffic jams. You know the best way to get your potholes fixed? Take a can of spray paint and go draw big dicks all over them. That's how people have been getting their potholes fixed in a lot of places. It'd be a pothole that's been there for like 7 years and nobody's ever filled it in. So these guys go out there with big white spray paint and draw like a huge cock right around it, and big set of balls. And then they're like, watch. And like the next day, pothole filled in. Funny how that works, huh? I encourage everybody to do your own version of that to get your government to acknowledge the problem. Self-driving cars, they're coming, right? They boast that they're going to remove all the inefficiencies associated with human driving and decision-making. But that still doesn't do anything for the fact that there's just too many physical cars occupying too small of a space. And each year, Americans waste $160 billion on fuel and time just by sitting in traffic. How they came up with that number, I have no idea, but that's the number that they set. And a total of 20% of the roads in the United States are considered to be in poor condition and require not just fixing, but outright replacement. One in five roads requires replacement. you would think there would be funding for this because everybody uses the roads. Who will build the roads? Right? That's the pro-government people. Yes, but who will build the roads? You mean the shitty roads? The roads that 20% of them all need to be replaced? Who will build these inefficient 70-year-old freeway systems? I guess the government will, but is that the solution? It's never the solution in my eyes, but over 35,000 people died on American roads just from 2014 through 2015. So I would say the flying cars need to hurry up and get here soon, right? Could you imagine? Could you imagine how many drunk idiots flying around in their car? No. Schools got a D+. American schools, and we've done episodes on this, and we've had David Rodriguez on from the Gatto Institute. American schools were designed by the Rockefellers and Carnegies. They were designed not to work in the way that you would think they work, or you would hope they work. They have been designed to just be, you know, they put the desks in straight lines to mimic the working in a sweatshop, working in like a sewing factory, one of the, like, you're like Bangladesh, you know, where you're putting buttons on shirts for, you know, the Carnegies and Rockefellers developed the schools, and they put the desks in these rows. I mean, they got into the details of it. It was a psychological conditioning operation there. You know, the bell that rings at the end of class, that's simulating the bells that ring inside the factories that these big industrialists owned. So what they were doing was they were preparing kids for a lifetime of working at their own factories. And so they were getting them used to that in the public schools system. There are 100,000 government public school buildings that sit on 2 million acres of land. And there are 50 million kindergarten through 12th grade students that attend them each day, not including the 6 million adults. And so, it's the schools are obviously used all the time, maybe not during summer, but all the time. So once again, much like the roads, you would think it would be a priority because you're interacting with this inefficiency every single day. You're on the roads to go to school, and you're on the roads that are falling apart to get to the school that's falling apart, to be taught by a teacher that's underpaid with textbooks that were printed by a company owned by Bill Gates for a Common Core curriculum designed by Bill Gates. It's like inefficiency after inefficiency after inefficiency. There's a $38 billion gap in the necessary funding to run all of these, to run all these school buildings. I'm just talking about the buildings. I'm not even talking about the, you know, just the buildings. There's a $38 billion gap. So because of that, as a result of this, about a quarter of the buildings, 25,000 of them, are classified as being in poor condition. Heating and air conditioning not available. Mold. Cramped classes. You know, look, it's tough enough to be a kid in school. It's tough to, you know, to sit through a full day of school, but to do it in subpar conditions, You're just asking for problems. And the inefficiencies in the schooling system are well known. This is not a surprise to anybody. But the buildings themselves are falling down. They're totally and utterly deficient. But we got to take care of our kids. Our children are our future. We just can't seem to find the money to take care of those schools, though. Solid waste gets a C+. The management of what is known as municipal solid waste is in all right condition. But that's in large part because it's being managed by private companies instead of government agencies. Trash collection and disposal is run by local or national companies that are in the profit business. If they run their businesses efficiently, they make more money. So even though Americans contribute more than half of their trash to landfills, part of what these companies, part of how they're making their money is their commitment to recycling. You know, they recycle 35% of the 258 million tons of municipal solid waste. And they turn another 13% of that into energy. So the reason why the solid waste component got a C+ instead of something else is not because everything's necessarily fine. It's just that everything's better than it would be if the government was in charge of it, because they've privatized some of this. So transit, D-. Approximately $90 billion is needed to rehab the nation's transit system due to underfunding and aging systems. Many Americans don't even have access to public transportation. A crime against those dependent on this government service for getting to their jobs that are, jobs, right? You remember jobs. We used to have them. And people needed public transportation to get to them. And they gave our transit system a D-. So new buses are not making their way into the city streets. Not quickly, at least. Old buses aren't being fixed in a timely manner due to budget shortfalls, if they're even fixed at all. It's one of those things that we can pretend that this isn't a problem until it is. And with the transit system, it has a direct impact. I mean, people can't get to work. People can't get around. If people can't get around, what are they going to do? Uber everywhere? I mean, come on. For people in the lower socioeconomic category, that's not an option to do that everywhere. So America needs to invest in this. Last one on this list is called wastewater. They got a D+. At the current rate of growth in America, nearly $300 billion will be required over the next two decades to connect those 56 million people to centralized treatment systems and sewers. This is wastewater. This is talking about not having septic tank, not having sewer, not having access to the sewer. You have a septic tank, I should say. And again, you want to talk about not being a glamorous infrastructure project? Wastewater connection, not a glamorous infrastructure project at all. Not going to win many votes doing that. But the 15,000 existing water treatment plants are overburdened and underfunded to do the job of protecting the health of people that pay for their services. You know what I mean? It's new technologies are coming out, but not nearly quick enough to handle the current and projected demands of this system. So, it's clear, it's crystal clear America's falling apart, not just as conceptually falling apart, which it most definitely is. It's literally falling apart with the infrastructure situations that we have. Look, the money needed to maintain just the infrastructure of what has been built, it doesn't flow to these areas because politicians don't think it's very important. So when someone tells you that America's broken, you can agree with them, but in a literal sense, it's broken and we haven't done a very good job of maintaining it. Anybody who owns a home knows that, buying the house is one thing. Maintaining it, over the years is another thing. If you don't take care of the systems, that they break down, and, you know, much like your body, has a cascading effect. You know, one system goes down, it affects the other. So yeah, you've got broken roads, potholes, inefficiencies there. And then you've got your public transit running on those roads that are broken down, taking you to an airport that's broken down. You have your electricity in your house is coming from inefficient methods. The water coming into your house is coming through 100-year-old pipes. The bridges that you drive over to get to your public parks are crumbling. And once you get to the public parks, they're falling apart. The hazardous waste is 3 miles away from your house. And the inland waterways surrounding your community are choked up and in horrible shape. It's everywhere. And you go to Europe and you see places that have been there. I went to a pub in Hampshire, outside of London, and this place had been there for 400 years. This building had been there for 400 years. We don't have anything like that in the United States. You know, stuff we have is like 70 years old, and it's all falling down. So we're not taking good care of it. So it's all going to cost us more later. I mean, you know this from going to the mechanic, right, for your car. Something's wrong, you don't get it fixed because you don't have the money, and you're like, eh, it's not that bad. I'll put it off till tomorrow. Well, then that thing impacts something else in the car. Now the engine falls out, or now the fan belts go out, and you're like, God, shit, I should have replaced that when I had the chance, because it would have only been this much, but now it's five times as much because I have to replace the whole thing. This is what we're facing. But because it's politically neutral for people to be in favor of this sort of stuff, you know, it's not an advantage to them. It doesn't garner votes. It doesn't get enthusiasm. It doesn't get you elected in the first place, and it doesn't get you reelected after you've been there. It gets avoided. It gets, you know, they put people in charge of it. The White House appoints friends to go oversee these sorts of projects, and they go nowhere. It's an embarrassment. And, you know, America, man, love it or leave it. Greatest country in the world. Really? If it's the greatest country in the world, why is it falling apart? The infrastructure is just a symptom, really, of the decay of Washington, D.C. It's really nothing more than a symptom. We live with it. We'll deal with it. We'll have catastrophes. They'll get fixed. None of this stuff will ever really get fixed on a nationwide level. We'll just do patchwork operations to sort of fix this thing here and maybe patch that up there, or pretend like this doesn't happen, or you know. But we're clearly not serious about the problem, because the problem isn't. If we really wanted to get serious about fixing the infrastructure, we should talk about it in relation to terrorism or an invisible virus. That would get it on the nightly news, because those two things are the only thing that America wants to focus on: invisible enemies, while we spend the majority of our day driving around or interacting or turning on our lights or drinking out of the faucet and dealing with the infrastructure problems that are not getting fixed and are being avoided by people that are supposed to be looking out for our best interest. It's frustrating, but what are we going to do? I'll tell you what you can do. You can share the show, get it out there, tell people about it. I do appreciate that. If you want to find me on Twitter at Macroaggression, if you want to connect with the website, it's theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. And I'm on Facebook, / the Octopus of Global Control. For as long as I'm on there, they hate me. They hate, it's mutual. I hate them back. So thanks, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Hope you continue to do well. I don't bring these topics up to bum everybody out. I just think it's important that we address them, we acknowledge them, we start thinking about them, because pretending like you don't have a problem and sticking your head in the sand is certainly not going to fix it. And in the end, what I want is I just want a better situation for everybody, including myself. So thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.